Good morning, and welcome to the Saturday, April 9th, meeting of the Washington Fish and Wildlife Commission. We are on a fast track today, trying to get several commissioners off to north of Falcon. So we will be moving rapidly through the morning, and there will not be a break at 10 o'clock. And as I mentioned yesterday, I think most people know item number 22, we're moving into we're taking that off, and we'll deal with that in a subsequent commission meeting, either on the phone or here. We will open up with open public input, and we have one individual today, Dr. Thorpe. The floor is all yours. And you know the rules.
Yes, good morning.
I need to say a word first.
If I could. Oh.
Is that really?
Yeah. But. Commissioner Mankin wanted to say a word first.
Before we begin, I have to confess that today I'm doing penance. And the reason is that there's an unwritten rule on the commission that if your cell phone goes off during commission meetings and you're on the floor, you have to provide donuts for the entire commission, which I am doing happily today. And I'm very happy to announce that there is one special donut in there. It's about the size of Cleveland, and it's for the chair because it's sprinkled with little bits of lobster. So the commission needs to know that the donuts are available at any time, and there goes one of them right now.
I'm giving me one for the chair. Anyone want a picture of that dude?
This is the Rodney Dangerfield moment.
Do you want a fork or microwave or anything?
I did ask this morning when I knew that Commissioner Mankin was going for donuts, and I said I like lobster tails on top of mine, so I get little bits and pieces. This does look like it will. I'm glad we have a medical doctor on staff here. On the commission's
coffee's fresh.
Get the paddles out, please. All right. After all of that levity so early in the morning, we don't know what to do on a Saturday. So, Dr. Thorpe, please get us back to seriousness.
I'll do my best. Good morning. Director Unsworth, ladies and gentlemen of the Fish and Wildlife Commission, thank you for the opportunity to speak with you today. My name is Sylvia Thorpe, and I live in Nugent's Corners, which is kind of the corner of the woods near Deming, Washington. I have a 25-acre tree farm. I am speaking with you today about Washington's bobcat. This is the last cat to talk with you about. What I want to call your attention to, because I know I only have a few minutes, there's a graph here that has a big red flag on your handout. It is the bobcat harvest figures from 1935 to the present. Just take a look at the figures. The graph speaks for itself. The graph behind it is 1986 to 2015. There's no data from which is a concern to me. I'll speak about it in a moment. There's no data between 1994 and 99 and 2008 to 2016. The reason particularly that both those missing data points concern me, maybe they're just not available, but I could not find them at all, and there isn't anybody working on the bobcat at this point with the Department of Fish and Wildlife. The Convention on International Trade in Endangered Species, the CITES Treaty of 1975, requires annual pelt tagging and reporting for each state. And the state of Washington, at least what I was able to access, apparently doesn't have it or hasn't done it. And that's a big concern for me because we're out of compliance. The second thing is the pelt prices. So what you've noticed here, everybody can read the pictures, the numbers from 35 to 2008, the trend, I mean, if you follow the stock market, you look at trends. You don't go up and down unless you want to go crazy and lose all your money at the same time. But anyway, you look at the trend goes down. You follow me? Okay. All six regions are plotted here on the next set of graphs with Eastern Washington Bobcat at the top and Western Washington Bobcat at the bottom. Eastern Washington Bobcat fetches more money because the pelt is thicker and it's paler, and the pelt prices have increased tremendously. I'll speak about the East-West in a minute. Look at the next graph, the one that goes along like that for a long while. It's pelt prices that go from 97 to 2015. That's the yellow line. They bumped along under $100 for quite a long time, and before 1997, they spiked. And you can see that on the very last page. The Oregon Fish and Wildlife Fur Bearer Report is absolutely excellent. I hope we can implement a similar one. You will see the pelt prices from 1941 to 2010 for the pelt prices, and you will notice, particularly after the CITES Treaty of 1975, the pelt prices went up, and you'll notice that the Eastern Washington, Eastern Oregon Bobcat price, which is in green, is much higher. That's because of the pelt price. Bobcat used to fetch $60 roughly for a long time. Now it's $1,500 per bobcat. I will now gross you out. So here is bobcats that have been taken. All this stuff is in your handout. I'm sorry to exceed my limit. I will sit down and shut up. Here's the rest of them. They're all posted on the side of a barn. Okay. The point is not really to gross you out, but to say, where there's money, there's motivation. And the more money there is, the higher the motivation is. One bobcat coat fetches $150,000 on the open fur market. The fur markets have changed from North America, namely Toronto and Seattle Fur Exchange, and the North American Fur Exchange, North American Fur Auction, have now moved to Finland. They moved to Finland. So anyway, thank you very much for your time. I have also given you each commissioner a copy of my Lynx petition, which is about 60 pages, and there's a note on it. And I gave a special card to Director Unsworth. He's the only one that gets a card. Like, you're the only one that gets a big donut, but his doesn't have lobster tails in the card.
Thank anyway, you, Dr. Thorpe.
Yes, you're welcome. The only reason that I've been nagging like crazy with this Lynx thing, I think we probably all agree that Lynx is in trouble. But the reason that I am nagging is because of the emergency. There's a different, the RCW for the emergency, and I was talking to Mr. Freimeyer, is different, but incorporated in the WEC. So the wildfires are coming again, and I appreciate your time very much. There's also a little picture book with Lynxes. Thank you very much.
Thank you, ma'am. Any questions for Dr. Thorpe? I appreciate all the effort you've put forward. Wayne Klein and Kurt Kramer, please. Mr. Klein, you're up first.
Good morning, Commissioners, Director Unsworth. We're back. Occupy Skagit. There's supposed to have been a plan submitted, I believe, last fall. And as far as we know, it hasn't happened, unless it happened yesterday. We're a little perplexed, and frankly, we're kind of disappointed, and I'm sure there's a good reason, but we're just here to let you know that we're not going away. I understand there's a big coho crisis now, but that crisis has an answer. When the fish come back, they start fishing. Right now, the Skagit steelhead are back, and we're here, but we can't meet each other. It came to me that I think Kurt and I were talking. The last season we had was in 2009, 7 years ago. Any kid driving around Mount Vernon right now with a brand new driver's license has probably never met a Skagit wild steelhead. And this concerns me, and it should concern you. Look around the room. How many people here don't have gray hair? These kids, those of us that have hair, these kids, they might as well be unicorns. They're not going to, how can you care about something you've never seen? Something you've never been introduced to, something that you have no experience with. Nobody's going to care. When we're gone, they're gone. Anyway, I don't know what needs to be done on your end, but we're begging you to keep the pressure on. Let's go. Push. If the tribes want a little more than what you think, as I understand it, this would be a five-year plan. Give them what they want for 5 years, then reassess. Movement. Well, this is an opportunity, and also when this season does happen, this opportunity, it's a like a fresh start. You can reevaluate what it means to be a sport angler. Catch and release will keep these fish going. We have technology. We can monitor what we're doing almost right up to the minute. We can count the fish. We could actually probably monitor where they are in the river as we're catching them. So I just, it's been 4 years. We've been coming in here for 4 years now, and we want to do one more thing. We're having an event in Rockport on April 30th, our annual, doesn't that sound bad, an annual protest to get this done. I want to invite you guys so that you can maybe deliver the bad news if there is some, or the good news if there's good news. You, instead of me, we get all these guys. I have to give them the news. What happened? What happened? Nothing. I want you guys to show up so we can converse in something more than 3 minute sound bites. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Clayton. Commissioner Carpenter.
I don't want to take any of Mr. Kramer's thunder away, but he's going to drive me up there on April 30th, so I know where you are. But we just had a discussion about this at the Fish Committee two nights ago. And as it relates to steelhead right now, this is the priority. And I don't know if you guys were in Port Townsend for our December meeting. But we were told then by Annette Hoffman that she thought things would be done by the spring of 2017. I don't know what's changed. I don't know if Mr. Birdie knows if there's been any additional progress with NOAA or where that plan is stuck. But I know the director's behind it. We've talked about it. So it can't happen this spring, but everything in our power is going to happen next spring. So I know it's another year away, but we believe in it. We intend to stay the course and get it done. So I hope that's of some value.
Yeah. Mr. Grable.
I really appreciate what you guys are doing. You know, you're consistent. You're doing it everything the right way. And believe me, that means a lot to us. I wanted to mention that we had to wait for 13 years to get a season on the Wenatchee River. And this is my home ground. I grew up fishing the Wenatchee River. Steelhead was a very precious commodity. And that was the goal of Raleigh Schmidt, and former commission member and also director of National Marine Fisheries. When he retired and moved back to our area, that was his mission, to get the Wenatchee River open again. And it still took more years than you're talking about. So I understand your predicament completely. But as Larry says, we've made this a priority, absolutely. And it's not just, as you know, it's complicated by current NOAA rules on ESA-listed fish. But that's being addressed, and actually there's indications that there's hope for, I don't know what I would call it, an exemption or not, but at least that potential is being explored. So thank you again for being here, and know that, as Larry said, we've made this a priority and are moving on it as fast as we can.
Thank you.
You bet.
And I'll just add my two cents. Being a neighbor of the Skagit, it is on the front burner. So
you're coming, right?
Pardon?
You're coming up?
I hope so, yeah. I didn't know I was going to share a ride with Larry now.
Well, I'll pick you up.
No, I'd like to, yeah. I just...
Very good.
Sure. All right, Kurt.
Good morning, Commissioner, Director. It's the spring, and we're back. I told the guys when we got started in this thing that I would not be surprised it would take at least 5 years. Unfortunately, once again, it's proving that I was probably right. Extremely disappointed that that's the case. If we don't have a fishery next year, we'll be back again. And as long as I'm upright, we'll continue to be back. Hopefully, our fondest hope is that this year we could have been celebrating going fishing, and let's hope that we can do that in 2017. It'd be a great cause for celebration for all involved. You know, Puget Sound steelhead fishing has been in dire straits. It's a wonderful resource. It's unfortunately we haven't got back to it yet. One of the major differences between the Skagit and Wenatchee is, yes, they're both ESA listed, but the Skagit fish are abundant to a large extent. The run sizes the last 3 years have averaged more than twice MSY escapement levels. I doubt that there's many steelhead populations in the state of Washington that are more robust than the Skagit steelhead. The Skagit steelhead had a downfall in 2009 when it was closed. Those low escapements produced astounding numbers of fish, recruits per spawner. There was over three fish per spawner, which is really high productivity for a steelhead population. It's a robust population. It's very productive. What we've learned in the last 5 years means that the likelihood of extinction of those fish is probably the lowest in the state. And here we sit, no one can go and even play minimal impact fisheries of catch and release on steelhead. Let's hope next year that we can share this time standing waist deep in the water with a fly rod in hand. Thank you.
Thank you. Yes. Mr. Walker.
Thanks, you guys, for coming back and bugging us every year, because I am one of your fans, and I agree with you. Couldn't agree with you more. One of the impacts that I keep bringing up in relation to this unnecessary closure is the impact on West Olympic Peninsula rivers. The coastal rivers are under more pressure because of the pressure that's displaced from Puget Sound. So we've got a huge problem developing in some of the other robust wild steelhead runs that we have in our state. So I'm all in favor of solving this.
Around the world to fish, and it would become a mecca for all the steelhead bums, if you like, you know, the term for in the western U.S. for sure. Yeah. The fish have done their part. We feel that we've done our part. We've tried to do our part as professionally, if that's the correct word, as possible. Mm-hmm. And but we are persistent, and we will be back. Thank you.
Steve Franson, please.
Sure is the rain. Good morning, Commissioners, Chair, Director Unsworth. Occupy Skagit has learned through our internal connections that part of the problem was the negotiations with tribal fisheries managers getting this plan done. I've known the Upper Skagit fisheries manager since he was in junior high school. I've talked to him. He's not intransigent. This is doable. If you need a facilitator, a mediator, a little assistance, Occupy Skagit is willing to do more. It's getting to the point where, yes, it astounds that we can't get this little project done. And I just wanted to mention, you mentioned the coastal rivers. Well, I was on the Queets River yesterday enjoying the late winter, early spring sunshine, and it is crowded out there. The Queets River has become the new Ho River because of the crowding on the Ho River. And in order to fish the Queets River yesterday, I packed a raft 7 miles up river beyond the end of the road and floated back down and fished. And I did not catch a steelhead. I caught a bull trout. You're not allowed to angle for bull trout in Olympic National Park. But if you catch one incidental to participating in a lawful fishery, you must leave it in the water and release it unharmed immediately. Well, the Skagit River has the best bull trout population in the state of Washington, estimated roughly at 20,000 fish. In fact, it's and they are ESA listed as threatened. Yet, on the Skagit, I could, if it were open to bull trout fishing, retain 2 bull trout per day over 20 inches. Now, most bull trout are between 14 and 20 inches, and it's a real uncommon day that I would catch 2 over 20, but it has happened, and 1 over 20 is a very doable activity. why isn't the schedule, why don't we have a bull trout season until we get this steelhead season reopened? I'd more than happy to release any incidentally caught steelheads, since even if it's open, it's only open to catch and release fishing anyway. But we just want to fish. And we'd like to ease up the crowding just a bit. Would be really, really appreciated. Thank you.
Thank you. Commissioner Carpenter?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Now, Director Unsworth, you're probably getting tired of hearing about Occupy Skagit in your tenure. And on behalf of these folks' efforts, I guess we don't meet in May, but could we request a briefing on the status for the June meeting, without adding a lot to the workload of staff, but to, you know, a current report of progress and any impediments and what needs to be done to have this thing ready to go by year's end? Thank you.
Thank you. So, I think that's how the system should work. Input, response. So, thank you all for your participation. We are moving into... No.
You don't get to talk today, right?
Okay. See you later.
No, I did you have one, Ron?
Yeah. Did you
want to talk?
Public input, I did.
Oh.
Okay. Call Ron up.
Mr. Ron.
Okay.
I wasn't doing that intentionally. See? No donuts.
Yeah.
Well, first, good morning, Director and Commissioners. Thanks for giving us the opportunity to speak today. One of the main things that I'd like to say is I really appreciate what you and staff are doing. I'm going to get to North of Falcon, but we've done many good things together. Our ESA rockfish program with the fish descender and education warded off one of the biggest fishing closures in the Puget Sound's history, which we would have lost 50% of all the structure because of ESA listed rockfish, which meant no fishing MPAs throughout the Sound, the Strait, Hood Canal, Puget Sound. It would have been really ugly, and we're probably going to come forward with next with the possibility of making a fish descender law. We got a bunch more in. We wanted to try and flood the Puget Sound with more free fish descenders. On the last trip, I think you saw in the December meeting at Port Townsend, I was on the boat that caught the Boccaccio. I actually hung up on my wife when I saw it come over. I was trying to help her. She was lost, and I actually hung up when I saw the Boccaccio come overboard, and it was in perfect shape. The guy that caught it started reeling it up fast, and I reached over and turned his throttle down on the electric reel so he would bring it up really slow, and that's the best-looking Boccaccio I've ever seen in my life. And that was quite an experience, because we went into Port Susan to catch it in the mud. When they told me we were going there, it's like, no, there's nothing up there. That's mud. Doggone if we didn't find that spot the guy knew from 30 years ago, and we got into all kinds of rockfish, big ling cod. I was amazed. But anyway, that's one of the things that we've had success with. The Puget Sound Steelhead Hatchery Wildfish Conservancy lawsuit. Really appreciate everything you've helped us do. Frank Urebeck and I have had 6 months into trying to make this work, and finally, Cantwell and Murray stepped up and put some pressure on NOAA, but I'll tell you, it felt like we were sitting there alone forever. Nobody wanted to listen. They're willing to watch our hatchery systems, and I went to the coastal guys. I got the commercial guys to come in and help write letters, and they were partially responsible for getting Murray and Cantwell engaged into getting on NOAA, because every time it went to NOAA, they just booted it and said, oh, we got everything covered, which they did not. And I told everybody going in that they were going to tell them this. And the last talk I had with Rob Jones, he was pretty hot at me, but I could tell it finally got sunk in that they needed to get on those HGMPs and now. So right now we're waiting to see what's going to happen, what the next step's going to be, but we can't allow Wild Fish Conservancy to shut down all our hatcheries. I don't know what we're going to do, but we're going to have to stay together on this and really push forward. Going into North of Falcon, it's probably the most contentious North of Falcon, and what a seat to step into, but thank you. I just want you to know that we're behind you. It's going to be ugly. We know it's going to be ugly, and we're supporting the department on trying to have a better outcome. We've given everything away. You know, we're down to the table of no fishing. What's the difference between an agreement and no agreement right now? No, we don't fish while the tribes fish. That's not acceptable. They don't have in-season management. We're the only ones with in-season management. And what I see anymore is anytime we get 4 or 5 days of good fishing, that area shuts down immediately. And I think maybe it's time to retire the test boats. We use those to build seasons to open them up. Now they're shutting us down. And we're the only ones doing in-season management. We know coho are in trouble, but there are avenues we can do, which the Fish Committee understands. Pat Patillo is really doing a great job, and so is the advisors, trying to make sure that everything goes the way it needs to go, that there are attainable fisheries out there. And, you know, the outcome, at best, is still going to be tough, but it's going to be doable. And I just want you to know that we're supporting you all the way. So don't feel like if the governor comes down, we're here for you. We really are. Thanks for everything.
Mr. Mackin.
Yeah, Ron, don't leave yet.
My hat's off to you.
Yeah, thank you.
He wants a donut.
When was the last time you combed it?
Well, this morning, kind of.
You need to get closer to Mike.
Yeah. In case this is being recorded. Yeah. He's got a gun in my back.
Yeah. I just want to thank you for everything you've done. It's not really well known how much effort that Puget Sound anglers and other fishing, recreational fishermen have put into the likes of things like rockfish recovery I know that I've been sitting in some of those meetings on rockfish recovery. NOAA would not have the biological specimens and samples to do the genetic work that they are required to do had it not been for you and Puget Sound anglers and others. And so my hat is off to you on all the things that you have done. The work with Descenders, I think, is remarkable, and I encourage you to continue that type of work. Thank you very much.
And I appreciate that.
Mr. Mackin.
I wanted to take this opportunity to thank you for the support that you've given to our enforcement program. I think that that's been crucial, too. You've done so many things. We can't just spend our morning recounting it, but just wanted to mention that, too. Thanks, Ron.
Lights on, but I don't know. Nobody's home. You know, having guys like Mike Cincy and people like that that we believe in, you know, they put it on the line for us, so we have to stand behind them and help them. And, you know, it's been an honor to help Mike and the department. We weren't friends in the beginning, but we became friends. You know, and there was no bad blood, but Mike has been crucial to our marine waters. I mean, they were getting raped a lot. And Mike's been the guy, and previous Bjork has stood up and made sure and shut down a lot of bad fisheries that, you know, were huge scale, massive scales. And, you know, we can't appreciate enough the people. Most people don't even know what's happening out there on our waters. And enforcement's been incredibly strong in making sure that foreigners or, you know, even some of the tribes, it puts him in hot water, but he's willing to do it. And so we've, you know, just want to say thank you to him too and the enforcement division.
Thank you, Ron. And Mike owes you a donut now, by the way. I'll sell you one. I got 12 up here. Is there anybody else that I didn't have a sheet on? Okay, then that brings to a close the open public input.